beginning of my career, I had to block out the negative noise. And there was a lot of negative noise. I couldn't let it affect me. And there was no way I would. And I knew the team would listen to it and stuff like that. But, you know, it was about blocking out the noise. And then early in my career at LSU, we faced some adversity. I mean, some strong adversity. And it was time to block out the noise. And we can see through adversity, it made us stronger. And I do believe the loss to Troy was a turning point in our program. It helped us realize what we had to get done, what we had to do as coaching staff, as players. We could never let our hands down. We always have our hands up and ready to prepare for every game. I think that so now the noise is good.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a long-awaited edition of Hey Fightin' Podcast, the official podcast of LSU football, as always, but not as frequently as used to be. I'm Cody Worsham, digital media reporter for LSU Athletics. I want to start, obviously, I played an audio clip there at the beginning, and I'll get to that in a second, and why I played that. I want to start by answering the question that I've gotten most over the last few weeks on Twitter, in DMs, even some text messages, even some phone calls. Cody, where has Hey Fightin' Podcast been? I even got the question from one listener in a voicemail question, which you can always send in. Just read the episode description at the bottom. This one's from Christian Hurston.
Hey, what's up? I love the podcast. I always look forward to it every week. I want to know what happened. I haven't heard anything since the running back show a month and a half ago, or a month or so. Want to make sure that you're doing okay and that we're still going to hear some great content. Let me know. Can't wait to hear more updates and see what's happening, even in this crazy season that's happening.
There's a lot of ways to answer that question. I'll be as transparent as I possibly can be. One, there wasn't much to say. Let's be honest, it's been a rough month for LSU on the football field, in more ways than one. Not only the struggles losing to Auburn in not very pretty fashion, losing to Texas A&M on the road, but also the fact that a lot of football did not get played. There were only two games played in the month of November, and several were rescheduled, as we will get to here in a second. So it was kind of difficult to talk about a lot of those things in context. The second reason, and honestly, it's more of the primary reason, and you'll have to forgive me, I can't be completely transparent here just because some of it's personal, some of it's private. I've just had a little bit more on my plate lately in a number of arenas, and I had to make some decisions on where I was going to focus some work, where I was going to focus other work. So if you've been following me on other platforms, I've been doing a lot of basketball stuff, a lot of basketball podcasts, a lot of basketball videos. I've had a few other things that I've had to deal with away from the football podcast. If you've followed me during football games, the last couple of football games, you've probably noticed I haven't been tweeting as much. It's just a couple of difficult decisions I had to make. But now I am at a point where I feel like I can get my feet back on the ground and talk about a little LSU football, which I'm excited to do because I'll be honest, it's been a tough season, and it brings back to why I played that audio clip at the beginning. If you heard the audio clip at the beginning, you recognize probably that was from January, and that was Coach O talking before the national championship game. And I went back to the beginning of the year in January, as I'm recording at the end of the year in December, because I wanted to zoom out and provide a little context really for myself, really just to put things in perspective for myself, because just personally speaking, I'm not even talking about LSU football, I'm talking about just myself. Last year's championship run and how it carried over into January of this year was wild. It was a once-in-a-lifetime sort of opportunity, the way everything unfolded. I'm not talking about going undefeated and winning a national championship, although that doesn't happen often. I'm talking about being on the ground for the best team of all time, in my opinion, the best college football team of all time, the magic of the season, the emergence of Joe Burrow, the emergence of Clyde and Justin, and just every little storyline that popped up last year that was so incredible. And I wanted to zoom back on the context of that, because part of what made it special is where LSU came from. LSU didn't come from 4 10-win seasons before that. LSU and Coach O in particular, and then my experience as a person who covered the program from the outside, now as a person that covers the program from the inside, LSU didn't come from rock bottom necessarily, but LSU had to do some climbing to get to where they were last year. And they had to overcome some adversity. They had to take that Troy loss from 2017 and respond to it and learn from it and get better from it. And they did. And that was part of what made last year so special. And as I look at this year, LSU's 3-4 right now. They've just lost to Texas A&M in a game that was just not enjoyable to watch. Subjectively speaking, my personal opinion, I did not have fun watching that game. It was nice to see the defense play well. There were some positives. We'll talk about them. But I just didn't enjoy the game. It was rainy. It was sloppy. The extension of the game with the way that Texas A&M kept throwing the ball and all the incomplete passes, it kind of dragged on. There was a lot that I didn't like about watching that football game. And it made me think about how there's been a lot about watching football this year that I haven't enjoyed. Again, subjectively speaking, when you lose 4 games and you come off a season, especially like last year where you didn't lose any games, it's less fun. And so I wanted to do this for myself. This is kind of a thought exercise for me. But I wanted to zoom out and get the big picture perspective. This season to me, this 2020 season for LSU, with COVID, with opt-outs, with injuries, with struggles on the field, with rescheduled games, it hasn't been the most fun season ever, to put it lightly. And it made me think of that Troy game I've thought about it a lot lately. This season feels like what that Troy game was for one game. That's what this season feels like to me. It feels like the Troy game of a season, the macrocosm of the Troy game extended out over an entire season. And where I'm at right now and where I hope the football team is right now and where I think the football team is right now, because we're going to hear from Coach O in a second, where I hope things are is that this can be another turning point. And what I mean by that is that this can be a season where everyone learns. I learn as a content creator. The coaching staff learns as coaches. The players learn as players. The administrators learn as administrators. The fans learn as fans. Everyone learns from this season and gets a little bit better moving forward so that this season can be a turning point going forward. Now, I know that the instant criticism to that, because it's in my head too, is no, you have to sustain success. You have to do it every year. And I do agree with that. You do want sustainable success. You don't want to see peaks and valleys. You want to see something consistent. I'll say 2 things about that. One, comparison is the thief of joy. Don't look at other programs. Don't look at what other programs do. Don't look at how other programs do or don't sustain success. When you compare yourself as a fan, as a player, as a coach, as a content creator to someone else, you're robbing yourself of the joy. It's just not fun. It's just not fun. I don't think it's productive either. You have to set your own standard and live up to it. And that's where LSU as a football program has to get back to. And to me, that's the point of the next 3 games. The next 3 games, you could write off as meaningless. You play Alabama at home, undefeated Alabama. You're a massive underdog. You beat them last year. They're going to be hungry for revenge. You could write that off as, oh, LSU is going to not play hard and get blown out. You could write off the Florida game as Florida's better than LSU this year. That's a write-off. You could write off the Ole Miss game as it's the last game of the year. It's December 19th. It's after, you know, it has no relevance to the championship run. You could write that off. You could write off the next 3 games as just in the season now. Who cares what happens? You could, but I don't think LSU will, and there's no way LSU should. The next 3 games, to me, are about starting that turning point now. And it could be as small as one player. It could be as small as one position group, one coach. You need to find the things in the next 3 games that you can build on for the future. And I'm still bullish on the future of LSU football. Is that right? Bullish? I never get bullish and bearish right. I'm optimistic about the future of LSU football for a number of reasons. Yeah, bullish was right. I looked it up. The reason that I'm optimistic, the reasons that I'm optimistic are numerous. LSU's done it before. LSU has a rich recruiting base, a big recruiting class coming in. The coaching staff has done this before. Coach O has used turning points to build back to something bigger. There are smart offensive minds, smart defensive minds in the room. There's a lot of good football players in that facility. History tells me that LSU football is going to be one of the top programs in the country every year. That's just what it's been basically my entire life. I'm optimistic about the future, but you have to spend the next three games finding the building blocks. The next three games are about 2021 as much as they're about 2020. Now, for the players, the next three games are about one game at a time, executing your job, doing everything you can to the best of your ability. For the program, on a larger level, it's about who's going to rise to the challenge, who's going to step up when things could not be worse, right? It's a season that's made it difficult to focus on football with all the distractions. When you are 3-4 in December, it's hard to focus on finishing. Every excuse in the book, right, is there to just opt out, to use the phrase, mentally for the season. I get it. My hope and my thinking, and maybe it's optimistic thinking and maybe it's sunshine pumping, I think in the next three games, we're going to see who can be a part of the solution for LSU next year. I think it's about finding solutions and finding leaders and finding players, coaches who can get this program back now, instantly, next season. And I'm optimistic that they're going to find those things out. I'm optimistic that the next 3 weeks, regardless of the score, I don't particularly care what the score is going to be. I'm hoping LSU wins all three. Realistically, who knows what happens. I'm hoping that the next three games, we see those guys rise to the challenge. And if that happens, I think you can look back. Maybe it's a year from now, like I'm doing now with Coach O's quote from January. Maybe it's 2 years from now. I think you can look back on this three-week stretch, and even last week with A&M, as you saw some guys step up on defense and some guys rise to the occasion. I think you can look back at this stretch and say, you know what? That's when we first saw the signs of this player becoming a superstar. That's when we first saw the signs of this player becoming an LSU legend, right? I mean, go back to Joe Burrow. When was the first time we saw it with Joe? It was probably when he got smacked by the UCF defender and picked himself up and dominated, right? We saw some signs before that too, like beating Georgia, and you know, even that first game against Miami, there was a confidence to him that you saw. The game-winning drive against Auburn, you saw flashes there. But if you think about his low point, getting shut out against Alabama, comes back a few weeks later against UCF in the Fiesta Bowl, and gets smacked on a pick six, you think he's done for the game, and who knows what happens for the rest of his career. But he picked himself up and turned himself into the best player in college football history. Now, I'm not looking for that dramatic of a turnaround. I'm not looking for somebody to emerge over the next 3 weeks as the best player in college football history. But I want to see some guys step up. That's what I'm looking for, and that's how I'll be watching these games. Yeah, I'll be keeping an eye on the stats. Yeah, I'll be keeping an eye on the scoreboard, all that stuff, the storylines. The biggest thing I'm looking for is, who are the five or six guys? Who are the guys that are going to be on the poster for the 2021 season or the 2022 season because of the way they carried themselves over the final stretch of the season? Who's going to be the guy that you watch the Alabama tape back and you think, man, this kid's special. This kid's got something. That's where my head is for the next 3 weeks. And that's the things I'm looking for. That's the things I'll be talking about. That's the things that I'm hoping unfold for the fans, because I think that's important for the fans too. I think the fans want to see over the next three games, who is the future of this program? And it's going to be answered in the present. That's when we're going to find out those answers. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited to be back on the podcast. I'm sorry for the long intro, the long rant. I just wanted to start there, make up for lost time since I haven't recorded one of these in a while, get my thoughts out there, the thoughts that have been building over the last couple months. Now I can start to transition into some more recent and timely topics. Before I do that, I do want to kind of sandwich this off. I started it with a Coach O quote. I want to finish it with a Coach O quote from this week that I think encapsulates a lot of what I feel in a much more condensed version.
We built a championship program, and we will be champions again. Recruiting is going well. We got some great young players. We have some stuff that we have to get fixed, and I know we have to fix it, but I've done it before, and I'll do it again.
All right, I want to start by, I'm not actually starting. I started a long time ago. I want to move on to the next topic. I want to talk about Terrace Marshall. And I know Terrace was the latest player to opt out. I know in context, he gave a speech to the team a couple weeks ago about finishing the mission, completing the mission. I'm not going to get into the specifics of that necessarily. I want to start by zooming out again. I'm doing a lot of zooming out right now because the zooming in stuff is not as fun as it was last year. I want to zoom out and look at Terrace Marshall's career. But before I do that, I want to zoom out and look at Terrace Marshall as a person. And again, let me put my bias on the table here. You all know I work for LSU. You all know that I've worked with Terrace in the past on various things. There's a bias there, but there's also a familiarity there that I would be remiss if I did not use this opportunity to talk about Terrace Marshall, the human being. Terrace Marshall is as good of a human being as you can get in a football program, period. If you sign one Terrace Marshall every year for your class, you're going to win a lot of football games. And it's independent from his talent, which is superb and spectacular, five-star player, number one receiver in the country, scored touchdowns at an unprecedented rate at LSU and at a higher rate than anyone in the country over the last two seasons. It's independent of that. It is the person that Terrace is. He is the guy that shakes your hand anytime he sees you, looks you in the eye, the guy that respects the head coach as much as he respects the lowest person on the totem pole, which is probably me anytime I go over to football ops. He treats his teammates with respect. He treats the training staff with respect. He treats the fans walking by the after the game with respect. He's just a respectful, good human being, decent in every way. And any interpretation of his decision that isn't grounded in that reality, because I'll be honest, I said it was an opinion. It's a fact. Talk to anybody. There's not a single person in the world, in my opinion, that could say anything bad about an interaction with Terrace. He's just that good of a human being. So any interpretation of what he's done by opting out that doesn't include that in context is, quite frankly, not worth listening to, in my opinion. That's how good of a person he is. Now, the specific decision to opt out with a couple games left in the season, I'm not happy about it, right? That's from a purely selfish perspective. I want Terrace to play three more games. I want Terrace to play three more games this year and then 15 games next year and lead LSU to a national championship as a senior. Selfishly, that's what I want. I want to interview Terrace Marshall for a whole another year. I want him on the podcast five more times. He's a great football player, a great interview, a great person. I want to squeeze as much juice out of Terrace Marshall as I can. But that's not how this works. That's not how college football works. That's not how human relationships work. When someone has an opportunity to change their life, when somebody has an opportunity to change the life of their family and their parents who've sacrificed to get them where they are, and they have a difficult decision to make, and they make that difficult decision, by all means, you do not have to agree with it, in my opinion. You can think, well, that's the wrong decision. You could think, that's not the decision I would have made. I think that's fine. Where I get annoyed and frustrated is, and again, I know I work for LSU and here's me pumping sunshine, not really pumping sunshine, but taking the back of the LSU player. But I'm being honest. This is my honest opinion. I felt this way when I was in the media covering the program. I'm sure there's receipts out there that will prove that. When someone has an opportunity to change their life the way that Terrace is going to change his life in the next 8 months as he gets ready for the draft and gets drafted, you don't have to agree, but you have to be sympathetic and empathetic and understanding and realize where they're coming from and why they're making the decision they're making. Terrace gave LSU 7 games this year. He gave LSU 3 years of his life. He overcame excruciating injury. He played through pain. I'm gonna go off track a little bit here and go back to the second week of the season after LSU lost to Mississippi State. Terrace came in to film the hype video for week two, and he was limping like crazy. I mean, he was very, very much in pain. He said he didn't practice that day, and I'm looking at him. I'm like, there's no way he's playing Saturday. He is in too much pain. And sure enough, Saturday rolled around. I think that was the Vanderbilt game, if my memory serves me correctly, and he was out there ready to play. I mean, just and that's the stuff that you don't see from the outside, but that's how much these guys put their bodies on the line to wear purple and gold. Terrace loves LSU. He loved being a Tiger. He had a difficult decision to make, and I know he's torn up about the decision that he had to make. And again, you don't have to agree with it, but please just be considerate of where the guy's coming from and what the guy is working toward. And yes, I know some of the reaction will be, well, why wasn't he considerate of his teammates? Why wasn't he considerate of the program? And I think any of those questions are completely fair and certainly questions that Terrace has asked himself and will be asked. But if you understand who Terrace Marshall is, what he's done for LSU, he's a legend. He is an LSU legend. He caught touchdowns at a rate that no one's ever done before at LSU. He caught the game-clinching touchdown in the national championship game. He has highlights on highlights and stats on stats. He's an LSU legend. He will be remembered for that. And so I know I'm preaching to the choir, and I know I'm on my soapbox again after being on my soapbox earlier, but being completely subjective, I am a huge Terrace Marshall supporter, and I cannot wait to see him thrive in the NFL, and I cannot thank him enough for what he did for LSU and what he did for me and the way that we interacted and the relationship that we developed. I consider him a friend, and I'm very, very grateful for the way that he treated me and others around the program, and I hope LSU fans recognize that. That's my point of this rant. I hope LSU fans recognize that, because guess what? The program recognizes it. The head coach recognizes it, too.
Well, first of all, Terrence did come talk to me yesterday morning like a man. Terrence and I have a great relationship. You know, I play with his uncle, Joe Delaney, and he and I talk about Joe all the time. And so, you know, it was a little different between a player and a coach between me and Terrence, almost like family. So he came talk to me like a man. He explained his decision. I respected his decision. And, yes, this is a different time. You know, be able to, you know, like Jamar Chase hopping out, Terrence Marshall, two of the best receivers in the country, Tyler Shelvin. You just got to deal with it. Something you got to deal with. Next man up. But we've got a lot of young guys that are getting to play now. They're excited. And I think this is going to help us in the future.
So a couple things come to mind. One, obviously, who's going to step up and replace Terrace Marshall? There's a number of options. You're not going to get like-for-like replacement. You're just not going to get the same kind of production out of the next guys. I know Coach O always says next man up. That's the mentality. That's the mentality those players have. I think we all understand as observers that Terrace Marshall was at the top of the depth chart for a reason. But that said, his absence and the opportunity for others to emerge, I think you can see something from other guys that you haven't seen before. And it's not like the cupboard is bare. There is a lot of talent on the roster, especially at the receiver position, the pass-catching position. That was hard to say. Pass-catching positions. One obvious one is Kayshon Boutte, who we saw last week. Quite frankly, I thought he got robbed of a touchdown. Made an incredible play on that ball. You saw the ability. I saw that all fall. Every time I went out there, one was making plays. Like I'd look up and I was like, is that Jamar? Jamar's wearing one again? Like that was just my instinct. He was making plays. I think he's going to make some plays over the next couple weeks. Eric Gilbert's going to get a lot more touches. We know what he's capable of, and I think he might become the primary target in the offense, which would be exciting to see. A guy we haven't seen as much of, Coy Moore. He's played a little bit. A lot of ability there. The next couple weeks are huge for guys in his position, like a Coy Moore, like a Jontre Kirkland, who will now get more reps than they did before. And hey, take it and run with it. Show us what you got now. This is the time to shine. Kind of like Jamar did at the end of his true freshman season with the breakout in the Fiesta Bowl. Hey, that opportunity is there for a Kayshon Boutte or for Akoi Moore. And I hope those guys take advantage of it. I know they're excited about it. Jeray Jenkins, I think, has a chance to improve his profile, his stock. He's been one of the bright spots of the season. I love the way he's played. I love the way he plays full speed 100% of the time, which is an underrated quality. I mean, his motor is going every single time he's on the field. Every time he touches the ball, he's fearless. I just really love the approach that he's brought. He's going to get an opportunity to step up over the next couple of weeks. I wish Racy McMath was healthy. It doesn't look like he's going to play. I think he would really benefit from this opportunity. But another guy that we've talked about on this podcast before, Trey Palmer, if he's ready to go, we've seen his ability in the open field with the kickoff return earlier this year, with the punt return last year. Get him the ball in space and see what he can do. So there's some guys there that have a chance to step up. Here's Coach O talking about those guys and what they can do over the next couple of weeks.
You know, I like us to get Eric Gilbert the ball more. I think Eric Gilbert is an outstanding player. We can move him out to a receiver position. John Trey Kirkland sitting in the wings. Hopefully we can get Trey Palmer back. I don't think Racy McMath is going to be back this week. And then we have two great young receivers in Keshawn Boutte and Carl Moore. So we have a lot of guys that are hungry to catch the ball, and I think the next man up is going to prove that they're very good receivers.
All right, so we have a pretty good idea of who's going to be catching the ball. Who's going to be throwing the ball to these receivers and these guys who have to step up? TJ Finley has been the starter for LSU in the absence of Miles Brennan. Max Johnson came in against A&M, did some things. Every time Max Johnson has kind of come in, he's done some nice things. TJ, we've seen look like a very poised veteran quarterback, like he did against Arkansas when he threw the game-winning touchdown. We've seen TJ struggle, as freshmen, true freshman quarterbacks are wont to do. Against Texas A&M, he didn't have his best game. Against Auburn, he didn't have his best game. So it's up in the air. That's the question. Who's going to start a quarterback? Coach O did address that on his press conference. I'll play that audio, and then I'll give my thoughts.
Well, we're going to see the game plan throughout the week. You know, it was the surface was wet. We thought that the only reason we pulled TJ was to put Max in and to try some quarterback runs. And we had planned that all week. And we thought that we could get that done, but we couldn't. So we're going to see this week. We're going to practice both of them. And then we're going to make that decision at the end of the week according to the game plan and what we need to get done on offense.
So we'll see. I think Coach O will probably announce that. That press conference was Monday. I'm recording this Thursday morning. Coach O has a press conference Thursday afternoon. I would guess he would announce it from there. Just a guess, not an educated guess, just a complete guess. I would guess TJ Finley will get the nod because he's had the nod going forward. But I'm going to make the case for each guy, and we'll see what happens. I'm just going to lay out the case for why Max should be the starter, and I'll make the case for why TJ should be the starter, and just kind of let you form your own opinion, and we'll see what Coach O decides. So Max Johnson, I'm basically going to make the statistical case. Max Johnson has been pretty accurate when he's played. He's 29 of 46 on the season. His adjusted completion percentage, if you take out drops and throwaways and balls that were tipped, is 73.8. That's slightly ahead of TJ at 70.2. So Max has been accurate when he's played. We know he can make some plays with his legs. He can extend plays with his legs. That's going to be a plus, and that's certainly something TJ can do, but Max seems to be a little bit more electric. Under pressure, Max has been maybe a little bit better. Neither Max nor TJ has been exceptional under pressure, which is pretty typical of freshman quarterbacks. It's just the last thing to develop. For example, Miles was exceptional under pressure earlier this year, 22 of 38, 434 yards, 4 touchdowns, just 1 pick, 122.0 NFL passer rating, 76.7 adjusted completion percentage. Like, he was lights out against pressure. TJ and Max have both struggled a little bit. Max has seen a ton of pressure. On 40.4% of his dropbacks, he's getting pressured. That's actually more than Miles, who is at 35.2, and way less than TJ, who's had much less pressure than either quarterback at 23.5. So Max has had some pressure. He hasn't thrown any interceptions in that pressure. He can do some things with his legs. I thought against the he's the maybe the hotter quarterback, if you will, after the A&M game, playing the way that he did. And when Max has been kept clean this year, he's been stellar. His kept clean numbers are outstanding. 24 of 31, 77.4% for 235 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. 77.4% adjusted completions, 119.7 NFL passer rating. He's been good when he's kept clean. He hasn't made huge mistakes when he's had pressure. He can do some things with his legs. He's the quarterback in form, I guess, based on the last performance. Now, TJ, the case for TJ is sample size. We've seen a lot of TJ. We know what he can do. He can win you a game on the road like he did against Arkansas. He can win you a game at home like he did against South Carolina. His highs have been a little bit higher than Max's. He's made a few more plays. He's had certainly more opportunity to do it, but he won the job originally. He's hit a few more deep balls than Max has. He's got the big arm. He's got the big frame. He can take pressure in a way that Max can take pressure by avoiding the pressure with his legs. TJ is probably more likely to stand in the pocket and deliver a throw, take a hit like he did against Texas A&M. And we've just seen it. He started games. He's won games. He's won on the road. This is a big atmosphere. The one thing that you can absolutely say about TJ Finley is he appears to be relatively unflappable. I'm not saying mistake-free. I'm not saying that he hasn't made mistakes. But I'm saying when the moment is there, in my opinion, the moment hasn't looked too big for him. Maybe he's made a bad throw here or, you know, the pick six that he had against Texas A&M. We know Coach O wasn't happy about that. I don't think that he panicked and made that play. I think he just didn't want to, and I'm putting my own subjective thoughts out there. I think he thought he was about to get sacked possibly for a safety and saw an open receiver and just overthrew him. But he'll learn from that. And he's been the guy that's taken a lot of the reps with the ones throughout the year. He's more of the, you know, the pocket passer and an offense that prizes that. So that's the case for TJ. Whichever quarterback gets the nod, in my opinion, the offensive line has to play better or it doesn't matter. I don't think it really mattered who was under center on Saturday. I don't really think it mattered a whole lot what the game plan in general was offensively, because it was foiled from the start because of the ability of Texas A&M to generate pressure. And to generate pressure without sending numbers, that is the biggest issue for LSU. If you have a defense that can generate pressure by rushing four guys, at most five guys, and you can drop six, seven into coverage, makes it almost impossible for an offense. Makes it almost impossible for a quarterback. Now, I'm not going to point out the obvious. We all saw the protection issues on Saturday, LSU's line sliding the wrong way, triple teaming on one side and leaving one guy to try to block two or three guys on the other side. I promise you the coaching staff has seen that this week. They're working on it. They're working to fix it. If you can give the quarterback the time like you did against Arkansas moving forward, your quarterbacks are going to be fine. They're going to be freshmen. They're going to showcase their talent. They're going to make freshman mistakes. But the offensive line, to me, is where it starts and ends. And this Alabama game is, in particular, the right place to test that and to see that. Because go back to 2018 when Joe Burrow had no time against Alabama and LSU didn't put up a point against Alabama in Tiger Stadium in a much-hyped game. If you would have left that game saying that Joe Burrow was going to win the Heisman the next year by a record margin, people would have laughed at you. But Joe was a better quarterback than he showed in that game because he didn't have any time in that game. And Alabama was able to do what? They were able to generate pressure with three or four guys because Quinnen Williams was in Joe Burrow's face the whole night. And LSU didn't have a running game to complement it. So that's the second thing. The offensive line's got to protect a little bit, and the running backs have to be able to get some yards behind the offensive line in the running game. And if you can do that against Alabama, you can do that against anyone you play the rest of the way. The question is, can you do that against Alabama? And that's where you're looking for the two or three guys to step up. You're looking for a quarterback out of TJ or Max to take the mantle. Miles Brennan is physically incapable of playing right now, at least last I heard. I don't think that's changed. One of these two guys has an opportunity to try to assert himself in the absence of Miles Brennan. When Miles gets back, he'll jump right back into the competition. I would be surprised if he wasn't your number one guy heading into next season, But one of these two guys has a chance to make that decision a lot harder on the coaching staff. Same for the offensive line. Show that coaching staff, hey, I did my job against Alabama. We did our job against Alabama. Same for the running backs. You know, there's not been a whole lot of separation between Ty Davis Price, John Emery, in particular those two guys at the top of the depth chart. Separate yourself. Show the coaching staff that you're the guy heading into 2021 that's the undisputed leader at that position. And it goes to the receivers too. That's what I want to see from the offense. You want to see an offense move the ball. You want to see an offense execute. You want to see the quarterback have time. And you want the conditions to be there for playmakers to have the chance to make plays. If the offensive line doesn't protect better, if they don't block better, that's just not going to happen. And you're not going to be able to judge fairly how well a quarterback played, how well a receiver played, how well a running back played, because it's a game that's fought in the trenches. And so those guys in particular, it's a big week for them. It's a big week for that entire offensive line front to try to correct the mistakes that they made against A&M. What I saw against A&M wasn't guys getting beat one-on-one a whole lot. It was guys missing assignments or sliding protections the wrong way. And so I want to see these one-on-ones against Alabama, and I want to see who can win them. That's really all I'm looking for from the offensive line.
What happened in this game wasn't the amount of people that were blocking. It was how we were blocking it. And they were overloaded one side, and we turned away from it, and those guys came. And that's just scheme. It's something that we can fix. It wasn't about bringing extra people into the protection. We like to get as many people as we can out. We had enough people in protection, but we just wasn't sliding it the right way.
Last thing I'll say about the offense, and then I'll move to the defense. I know the offensive line has to play better. The offensive line knows they have to play better. The rest of the guys can do some things to make it easier on the offensive line, and that means the coaching staff designing an offense, implementing a game plan, maybe like they did against South Carolina, where you're getting the ball out of the quarterback's hand a little bit quicker. If you want to look at advanced stats, TJ Finley gets the ball out of his hands in about 2.5 seconds per attempt. Max Johnson's been about 2.7 per attempt. Now, you can interpret that either way. You could say TJ Finley gets rid of it a little bit quicker, or you could say Max Johnson's had more time to throw than TJ Finley did. That's up to interpretation, and that's kind of where I would take a stat and look at the film and apply it rather than draw a generalization from the stat. But, you know, speaking of that stat, here's TJ Finley. When he's throwing it in less than 2.5 seconds, his passer rating is 56.0. When he's got 2.5 seconds or more to throw it, it's 95.0. So when TJ has time, he's a little bit better. But typically, you want to try to get the ball out of your hand a little bit quicker. A guy like Miles Brennan, for example, was slightly better throwing with less than 2.5 seconds, 108.3 rating, as opposed to 2.5 seconds or more, where he was at 101.3. So it's different for each quarterback. But obviously, with the type of pressure you expect Alabama to get, you want to see if you can get the ball out of the quarterback's hands a little bit quicker, get the guys in space, stay ahead of the chains, stay ahead of schedule. If you do that, it makes it easier on the offensive line. It makes it a little bit, you take the control out of the defense's hand where they can't dictate, they can't blitz in certain situations, they can't send the house, they can't mix things up. They're a little bit more on the defensive, if you will. So that's going to be up to the game plan. It's going to be up to receivers to make not only the routine catches, but make a couple tough catches. Make a couple out of the box, out of the ordinary catches to make life a little bit easier on your offense. Get some yards after catch when the ball's in your hand quickly. You know, if the quarterback gets rid of it quickly, make a guy miss. Make a play. Get 9 yards instead of 3. It's on everyone, not just the offensive line, to play better. It's on the other guys to make life easier on the offensive line too, and on the coaching staff as well. So real team effort on offense this week. I'm excited to see which guys can win some one-on-ones, which guys can put some pressure on Alabama and make this thing competitive and play up to the LSU standard on Saturday. Okay, let's move to the defense, which, unlike the offense, trending a lot better the last couple of weeks. Now, the A&M game, I want to say this caveat. The rain helped LSU's defense. There's no question about that, that the LSU defense was benefited by the conditions. But you saw some guys step up and make some plays. You saw some guys playing with confidence that maybe hadn't been playing with confidence early in the season. You saw, for the most part, the defense limit the big plays, particularly in the passing game. Other than one big run, the defense had a really nice day against the run, too. So improvements there, the things that you want to consider and see carry over, obviously, is the play of a guy like Cordell Flott, the play of a guy like Derek Stingley Jr., guys who have been real bright spots in recent weeks, particularly last week. I feel a little bit for Derek Stingley at the moment because he's playing so well. He's just not getting thrown at as much and not having as many interceptable balls. But he's been playing lights out. He was excellent against Texas A&M. If you look at his underlying stats, his passer rating allowed this year is only 65.5. Hasn't given up a touchdown all season, according to Pro Football Focus. The stats that I'm looking at, teams are 11 of 23 for 130 yards when thrown his way, so under 50%. I mean, that's really, really good. Eli Ricks has been obviously stellar this season. He's at 65.9 NFL pass rating when thrown at this year. He's given up two touchdowns, but only 7 of 17 throwing his way, and he's got the three picks. So if you give up two touchdowns, but you get three picks, I think that's a pretty good trade-off. Cordell Flott was the real standout for LSU against Texas A&M. The things that he showed against the Aggies were the things that we saw from him as a freshman last season. The stats aren't necessarily indicative of how well he played. I think they've got him credited for like 3 of 4 thrown at for 44 yards or something like that. But we saw the PBUs, we saw the tackles for loss, exactly what you want to see out of the nickel. And if you can get those three guys on the field, Flott, Ricks, and Stingley, playing at an elite level, that's a great foundation for a defense. I think the other big bright spot defensively has been the play of Micah Baskerville. We've seen him transform the defense with his ability to key and diagnose. He is such a smart player. He's in the right spot. He's not getting out of gaps. He's filling the right gaps. He's been a huge benefit to LSU's defense and the way that he's helped solidify and limit the big play. His big play potential may not be, you know, through the roof, but he's just so solid and consistent. He's really been a sturdy presence there. You've seen the defensive line emerge. Jaquellen Roy is playing more. You're seeing some of those young, very, very talented defensive linemen get more and more snaps, which is a benefit of, you know, some of the opt-outs, some of the injuries. You've had the opportunity for some guys to really step up and make some plays and get some more playing time on that defensive front. And you put all of those elements together, and you've got a chance to field a defense that, like LSU's defense has been in the last couple of weeks, much more competitive, much more solid, much more up to the LSU standard.
Simplification, communication, the things that we've been working on, having their cleats in the grass. I think the biggest thing that came out of the game was no explosive passes, and that was a big improvement for us. We had some explosive runs, but we didn't have mistakes where guys were running free down there scoring touchdowns. I thought our man-to-man coverage was great. I thought our plan was great. I thought our defensive line played very well against a very good offensive line. We tackled well. Our linebackers got to the football. We missed a couple of fits on the counter plays, on the big plays. But to hold him for 13 points and 267 yards was a great output by defense.
Just looking quickly at some stats from the A&M game defensively, some of these advanced stats. Flott had 6 stops. A stop is defined as basically a tackle that keeps the offense from getting what you would call a successful play. So to boil that down very quickly, I've explained this on the podcast before, but a successful play would be on first down getting 5 yards, first and 10 getting 5 yards. On second down, it would be getting 75% of the yards necessary. So if you were at 2nd and 8, it would be getting 6 yards. That would be a successful play for the offense. And on third down, it's getting 100% of the yards. And a stop is any tackle that prevents the defense from doing that. So Flott had six stops. He was 3 of 7 when targeted in the passing game, to correct a number that I gave you earlier. He had a PBU. His passer rating against was 58.6. I mean, other than a couple penalties, which you could argue against, he was outstanding. Micah Baskerville had 5 stops. He had 10 tackles. He graded out very, very well against the run for LSU. Graded out very well in tackle. He was the highest tackling grade for LSU, and according to Pro Football Focus, 85.6, which is very, very good. And then looking at a couple guys who played well in new roles or in expanded roles, mentioned Jaquellen Roy. He played 25 snaps, graded out very well for LSU. Glenn Logan played 33 snaps, graded out well. Ali Gay had 3 stops and 3 pressures. He continues to be disruptive. So there are some building blocks emerging for LSU, and those are guys that you would expect to be back next season, guys that could be futures of the program, and you want to see, do they continue to rise to the occasion? We saw Ray Thornton make a couple plays when he got in. We've seen Jabril Cox get involved. He's not necessarily a future piece because he's a senior, and I'm sure he'll be in the NFL this time next year. But Jay Ward has played well when called upon in recent games. I think the big question mark for LSU this week, in my opinion, you've seen all the other guys play well at other positions. Who steps up at safety? Mo Hampton is going to be back this week. Coach O said that in his press conference Wednesday, I believe. We've seen Jordan Toles get more snaps. He only played 9 snaps against Texas A&M, but we did see him out there. Jacoby Stevens, not really a piece for the future again because he's a senior and will be in the NFL next year. But who can play next to him? Todd Harris has played some. He played 65 snaps. So it's that kind of that Harris, that Todd Harris, that Jordan Toles, that Mo Hampton spot. Can one of those guys take the bull by the horns? Because I can't talk about recruiting on the podcast in specifics, but the word on the street is that there's a pretty good safety coming in next year. And you're going to want somebody to compete with him, to play with him once Jacoby moves on to the NFL. So that's a spot that I'm looking at this week. Can someone step up at safety and make some plays for LSU's defense? Okay, I've talked in depth here. I've gone on for a while. I know I was on my pedestal for much of the episode. So I'll finish with a Coach O quote here. And again, I started with a Coach O quote. I sandwiched it earlier when I finished my rant, and I'll finish the episode with one more because I think the most important part of the next 3 weeks, like I said, is you've got to build some character, you've got to build some toughness, you've got to build some identity moving into next season. And if you do that as a foundation for next season, you'll also see some success in the present moment. So that's it for me. I'll play this Coach O quote, and then we'll get back with another episode of Hate Fighting Podcast. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for your patience. The next one will be back sooner. I promise you that. We won't take another month off. I'll try to get back after the Alabama game. Hopefully Hester can get on too, and it's not just me talking the whole time. So let me throw it now to the Coach O clip, and then we'll wrap up. Thanks for listening.
You need to build grit within a football team. I think you need to be tough, build toughness. And the young guys need to learn how to go out there and play and win. But we need to coach them better. So I think it's a combination. Nobody wants to go through a season like this, but I do believe we're building character and grit, and it's going to pay off for us later on. I said, fight, 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 victory. Victory for